We all took sips of our respective bourbons, but Henry was the first to speak. Sometimes things happen and places get sounded for us. Things get touched that perhaps should never be touched. This time Lucian pointed the pipe stem at me, something he did so often that I sometimes wondered if his finger had a safety. Now I'm a big one for thinking, but I think you can give a man too much time to think. Tabasco's a thinker, and if you give him enough time, he'll think himself out of his job. He glanced at Henry. What do you think, ladies' wear? The bear lifted dog's head and stood, downing his bourbon in one swallow. I think it's time to go to jail. He crossed to the kitchenette, and dog padded after him. I smiled across the board at Lucian, and moved my own queen out into play. So you don't think it's such a bad thing to take Sancho on a little snipe hunt with this chase-a-thumb? He shrugged. At least until you can find something else for him to occupy his mind with. He puffed on the stem of his pipe and changed the subject. Hey, I heard Geo Stewart's family took him out sledding yesterday. I pulled out my pocket watch and studied its face in the dim glow of the painted hide lampshades. I figured Henry was right, and we needed to get out of there soon, or we'd be facing one of Lucian's signature bologna sandwiches with instant coffee sprinkled on it for seasoning as our dinner. As it was, we were looking at either a frozen burrito from the come-and-go or a pot pie from the holding cell kitchenette. The Indian says we gotta go. I walked past Henry and Dog. He shook his head. You ain't gonna finish the game? I placed my empty tumbler in the sink and returned to collect my hat and coat. I guess my mind's somewhere else. Lucian set his glass back on the small table, and I could tell he'd just as soon we stayed. You know, those Stewarts got more lives than a tin bear at a shooting gallery. He looked at all of us and chuckled. You know why Joe Stewart always wears a scarf or keeps his collar buttoned up on his shirt? Nope. Got a scar around his neck, runs from ear to ear. I leaned against the door. I noticed it. Back in April of 70, we had a bad snow, dropped about 40 inches overnight, and Geo finds himself short on supplies, mostly four roses, or red noses as we used to refer to it, and jumps on his motor toboggan and heads into town hell-bent for leather. Henry asked, motor toboggan? Lucian shrugged. That's what they used to call him, military surplus made out of someplace in Wisconsin. What happened? Lucian leaned back in his chair with his palms on his thighs. Mike Thomas. He paused for a moment. He still got that spread out near the Stewarts?
Yep.
Well, the snow got so deep that it filled up the cattle guards. So Mike's father had him string a strand of barbed wire across the ranch road to keep the stock in.
Oh, no.
Geo hit it at about 40 miles an hour. He chuckled. Mike and another artist fella, Joel Ostland, found him that afternoon, and they had to use a digging spade to get him loose from the road where his blood had froze. Doctor said that the cold was probably what saved him.
I opened the door for Henry and Dog, but just before closing it behind us, he added,
Another good reason for you to not move to New Mexico. It's warm down there, and you can bleed to death.
On the way back from the old folks' home, as Lucian referred to it, I conferred with the Cheyenne Nation, and we decided to partake of the best of both worlds and pick up a burrito at the come-and-go and take it home to the jail to warm it up. We were both surprised to find the much-used Olds Tornado parked out front and discovered Gina Stewart parked behind the counter. The same dirty parka was draped over her shoulders, and she was munching on some peanut butter crackers while watching a 13-inch black-and-white television, which was up on the cigarette shelves. She didn't even glance at us as we walked past the height indicators that were taped to the door jamb to help identify burglars. I had spent a lot of time in the gourmet portion of the store and knew that the frozen burritos were stacked like tiny bundles of firewood in the fast food section at the back. Henry studied me as I peered through the glass.
You are actually going to eat this stuff?
There was the shredded beef and cheese, the bean and cheese, and my old standby, the chicken and cheese. There was always the cheese with cheese, but I never felt full without the little bit of protein from the supposed-to-be meat filling. In all honesty, I tried not to read too closely when I partook of this type of fine dining. Armadillo and cheese would be more than I could stomach. You don't know what you're missing.
Yes, I do.
He wandered down the aisle to look for something more suited to his Epicurean tastes. I pulled a chicken and cheese out for me, and an extra shredded beef and cheese for Dog, and called after him, "Snob!" I put the veritable cornucopia of frise de jour on the counter, along with a tall boy can of Rainier, pulled out my wallet, and waited for the young woman to see me. After a moment she looked up, annoyed that someone was interrupting her evening, but when she saw me she brightened a little.
"Oh, hi, Sheriff."
I laid a 20 on the plexiglass that protected the plaster counter and read the poster that informed me about the available career opportunities in the country's third-largest convenience store chain with easily the most sexually suggestive name. "Hi, Gina. What are you watching?" I thought I could make out Cary Grant's voice and possibly Deborah Carr's. She chewed on a strand of her blondish hair.
"It's that movie where the man and the woman are supposed to meet at the Empire State Building, but she gets hit by a car."
"Must be the season for it," I thought. She rubbed some crumbs off her jeans and dropped the empty cracker wrapper in a trash can behind the counter.
"I think it's supposed to be romantic, you know, for Valentine's Day. I'm not supposed to be watching the TV during business hours. But the manager put it up there, and we don't have television at the house."
She paused as she looked past me to where Henry was opening another of the coolers along the back wall.
"I get bored, and it makes me feel better when I watch a movie, but not because of the movie, though."
She thought about it, and I watched her profile as she looked past my shoulder and continued to study the bear.
"I think about all the other people around the state that are watching the same movie, and it's like we're watching it together. I mean, they're lonely, they're bored, and we're all watching the same thing."
Her eyes came back to mine, and her voice dropped.
"You have to keep your eye on those Indians. They steal."
I raised an eyebrow, but ignored the remark. "It's more than just the state."
"Huh?"
I leaned back and traced the cable coming out of the display stand above me that then disappeared into the broken corner of one of the acoustic ceiling tiles.
"It's cable, Gina, which means you're watching the movie with the whole country." She smiled. "That makes me feel even better."
I smiled back. "How's Gio?" He thought for a moment.
"I think Grampus is fine, but I don't know. Since I missed my shift on Monday, they made me come in and cover tonight."
She leaned a little forward and confided,
"I don't like working nights. A lot of creepos come in here."
Henry joined us with a bag of mixed salad and an unsweetened iced tea.
"Present company excluded?"
She stared at him blankly.
"Huh?"
I looked at him. "Gina here says she has to keep an eye on you Indians, because you steal." He nodded.
"We do. But only small stuff, unlike you whites."
I pointed to the items I'd hunted and gathered.
"I'll cheat to save you from petty theft."
I turned to Gina. "How much?" Her fingers tripped across the keyboard of the cash register. She seemed relieved to have escaped the conversation.
$19.37.
I slid the 20 a little closer so that Gina would notice. I couldn't think of anybody in our little community that I'd identify specifically as a creepo.
"Creepos like who?"
She took the money and handed me my change.
"Ozzie Dobbs, for one. He's always coming in here, standing around and looking at my butt and hitting on me. It's totally gross."
That was surprising.
"Really?" I took the change and stuffed it in my pocket. A Volkswagen Jetta rounded the corner at Main, and the driver took advantage of the ice to hit the gas and drift the vehicle outrageously sideways. I raised my arm and hit the remote on my truck to blip the lights and draw attention to my unit, whereupon the driver slowed and drove on with a little more circumspection. Henry's voice rumbled,
"Rachel Terry, she is a wild one."
"Yep," I nodded, making a mental note to call Mike and Susie. I looked back at Gina.
"Ozzie Dobbs, really?"
"Yeah, he comes in here once a week at least. That's the only reason I don't mind covering other shifts. At least then he doesn't know when I'm working."
She picked up the beer and the tea and stood them in a plastic sack. Her eyes strayed back to the television.
He always wants to buy me things, which is nice because Duane is tight as the bark on a tree.
She dumped the frozen burritos and the salad on top.
You know, most people warm these up in the microwave before they eat them.
I picked up the package. Buy you things? She shrugged her narrow shoulders, and the parka fell off. She was wearing an oversized gray sweatshirt that had University of Texas in orange stenciled across her chest.
Yeah, one time he offered to buy me anything in the store if I'd give him a kiss.
She glanced around.
Like I'd fucking do that for anything in here.
The lights on Main Street were swinging in the wind and blinking yellow the way they always did after midnight, and it was as if the whole town, like a pinball game, had gone tilt. It was odd and depressing, thinking of somebody like Ozzie Dobbs targeting Gina. Sometimes it meant something, but most of the time, it was just the flotsam and jetsam of the human tide. I'm concerned about the younger generation. Henry nodded.
Do you think she paid for those crackers she was eating when we came in?
I was looking forward to my burrito and figured I could rummage a couple of extra blankets from the linen closet at the jail, since on seriously cold nights, it sometimes got a little nippy in the all-concrete holding cells. I wondered if I was getting to be like those old cons who couldn't sleep unless there were bars on the doors and windows. Now that was a really depressing thought. When we got back to the office, the flakes were basting themselves against a familiar forest-green Chevy parked in the visitor spot. From the sculpted drifts, it had been there a while. Both Henry and I could see that Ozzie Jr. was in the driver's seat, just sitting there staring. Speak of the devil, soon to arrive. I shut down the bullet and climbed out with our plastic bag, ambled my way around the front with Dog at my heels, and joined the bear as we stood there looking at Ozzie, whose eyes were open, but who still hadn't moved. I could hear the radio and could see the condensation in the windows from his breath. Henry and I looked at each other, the vapor from our breath whipping into our faces. I tapped on the hood of the one-ton Chevrolet, and Ozzie's eyes shifted to us. I stepped closer and could see that he was dressed in the same clothes he'd had on earlier today, but that there were smears of something dark on the sleeves of his jacket and the front of his shirt. I slipped by the Cheyenne Nation. My hand fumbled with the door handle of the truck before I flipped it open and stuck my head into the cab. The heat was on high, the interior of the truck was stifling, and Roy Orbison was singing Only the Lonely. It was blood on his shirt and jacket, with some on his jeans and even on the brim of his hat.
Ozzie, are you all right?
His eyes shifted to mine in a dull and listless way.
Are you hurt?
His voice was slurred, and I could smell the liquor.
Walt, I didn't mean to hurt him.
I put a hand on his shoulder and saw that there was an empty bottle of expensive tequila on the seat beside him, along with a collection of cheap valentines spilling from a bag.
Heard who, Ozzie?
He was with her, Walt.
His eyes darted around and toward Henry.
Hello.
I grabbed his chin and swung his face back to me, aware that, for legal purposes, he had to say it.
Who did you hurt, Ozzie?
He walked her back like it was some kind of date.
Where, Ozzie? Where did this happen? Tears streamed from his eyes, and he sobbed, his lower lip pulsing in and out with his breath.
I'm scared, Walt.
Ozzie.
I didn't mean to hit him that hard. I swear I didn't.
I took his arm. Come with me. He didn't resist, and I took his keys. Henry helped me get him up the steps. I opened the door, flipped on the lights, and we seated him on the bench by the dispatcher's desk. Henry, could you watch him? I snatched Ruby's phone from the cradle and hit the second auto dial. Vic answered on the third ring, her voice a little groggy but deep and sultry.
And what fresh hell is this?
God, she sounded good, half asleep and snarky. I need you at the office, now. She snapped the receiver down on the other end, and I hung up, quickly punching the Red Cross emblem on Ruby's color-coded phone. Henry was kneeling in front of Ozzie, holding him up with one hand.
Ozzie, where did all this happen?
He paused, but I guess I'd asked enough times that he finally got it.
My house.
Is Gio at your house?
Yes.
He slumped against the back of the bench, but the Cheyenne Nation kept him steady. Ozzie, what's your address?
101 Eagle Ridge, the one on the hill.
911. I recognized Chris Wyatt's voice, and I told him what I needed and where. There was a pause.
Walt, where the hell is that?
The development was relatively new and still mostly unoccupied, so even the EMTs didn't recognize the street addresses. It's in the Red Hills Rancho Arroyo subdivision.
Oh, okay.
I hung up the phone and hustled over to the water cooler to get a paper cup full for Ozzy. He reached out with a shaking hand to Pet Dog, who was sniffing the blood on his pants. I sat on the edge of the bench, glanced at Henry, and handed Ozzy the water.
Was it Geo Stewart that you hurt?
He looked at the cup of water, but didn't make any attempt to drink it.
I don't have any friends.
Ozzy,
I really don't.
He listed a little toward me, and Henry righted him. The small man looked at the bear in appreciation.
Thanks.
The Cheyenne Nation nodded. No problem.
I mean, I know lots of people, acquaintances, you know.
I was forceful with the next question. Is he hurt? He paused.
Yes.
How bad? He began crying again.
Walt, I didn't mean to hurt him.
I nudged the paper cup toward his mouth. Take a drink of water and tell me what happened. The cup hesitated there for a moment.
Walt, I think I'm going to be sick.
He burped, and then he heaved.
I'm going to be sick.
Henry hoisted him up, ushered him into the hallway bathroom, and flipped up the lid. Ozzy no sooner sat on the floor before he leaned forward and spewed forcefully into the toilet. He seemed capable of the action without hurting himself, so I draped a washcloth onto his shoulder and stepped back along with Henry, closing the door to give Ozzy a little privacy.
If you need anything, we're right out here.
I could leave Henry in charge, but it wasn't his job. I had to wait until Vic got here to babysit Ozzy, then I could take off. I leaned a hand against the door jamb, tipped my hat back, and thought about how I hated these kinds of cases.
Are your nights usually like this?
I threw him a look. Pretty much. Dog stood in the hallway as well and looked at the two of us uncertainly. I crouched down and put a hand out, and he hurried over. I pulled him in with my arm, and we all squatted there until my foot wouldn't take it any longer, and I slumped against the wall. I sat with Dog's head in my lap, and the three of us listened to Ozzy Dobbs puke his guts out.
I can stay with him until Vic arrives.
I sighed deeply.
That's okay. She's usually quick.
He continued to study me.
Then I will go with you.
No need in both of us going. I heard the front door jangle and the couple of thumps as Vic's Browning tactical boots struck the steps on her way up the stairs. She vaulted across the dispatch area and was standing in the hallway in front of us in her fur bomber hat, down jacket, Philadelphia Police Department hoodie, pajama bottoms and duty belt, complete with cuffs, extra mags, and Glock.
Stop!
I struggled to my feet as Henry stood.
I did not know you slept in pajamas.
Gun belt, too. I'm kinky that way.
Another round of regurgitation erupted from behind the door, and she raised an eyebrow at me. If you called me from a sound sleep for a DWI, then I'm going to kick you till you're dead. I left Dog with Henry, Henry with Vic, and Vic with Ozzy. The roads were still relatively dry, and with the lights and siren I was able to make good time to the Red Hills east of town, especially since there wasn't a single other vehicle on the roads this late. I blew through the blinking red lights and straightened out on Route 16, bellowing and bringing all 10 cylinders up like a pack. I took the turn toward Geo's place, but then steered off at the entrance to Red Hills Rancho Arroyo, which was announced by a monstrous gateway of hewn logs about the size of my truck. I eased off the throttle so that I could make it through and past the empty guard shack. There was a slight downslope that led along the creek to 5 rambling million-dollar structures. It was an educated guess, since I'd never been to the Dobbs household, but the lights were on at the one squatting on the precipice of the ridge. It was, of course, the mansion with the best view of the mountains. I slid the truck into the driveway, grabbed a wool muffler that was on the seat, unclipped my handheld radio from the dash, and quasi-leapt into the drifts of snow that had collected on the concrete. I made my way to the door beside the wooden and windowed garage doors that probably cost as much as my house. It was locked, so I pulled my maglite out and made my way around to the back on the sidewalk that circled through the landscaping surrounded by non-indigenous Colorado red rock walls. The large sliding glass door was opened to a deck with light cascading from inside the house that painted stripes across the snow-covered lawn. There was a blood trail to my right. When I got to the top of the steps, I could see where a few drops of blood had splattered across the travertine tile. There was a golf club lying on the floor, and it had blood on it as well. I stepped in the doorway with my heart palpitating like a friction motor, but there was no Geo. Somewhere in the house I could hear someone crying, but it was muffled and distant. It was cold inside, with more than a little snow blown in on the tile. I closed the door against the slamming of the wind. There was no blood on the thick carpet that led upstairs, and, all in all, there was more blood on Ozzy than in the house. I slipped my flashlight back into my duty belt. "Mrs. Dobbs?" There was no response, but the crying continued. I mounted the suspended steps that overlooked an expansive living room to the left and continued to the second door on the right. I didn't really want to intrude on the woman, but I needed a more detailed description of what had happened. I knocked. "Mrs. Dobbs?" I heard a shuffling, and then the sobbing stopped. "Mrs. Dobbs, it's Walt Longmire. Can I speak to you?" I listened as she padded to the door and turned the knob. When she saw me, she started crying afresh. "Oh, Walter! Oh, my God!" I leaned down so that I could be on her eye level. "Mrs. Dobbs, where's George Stewart?" She began really sobbing now, and her hands clutched for the lapels on my coat.
"Walter, it was horrible. Ozzy Jr. started screaming, and George was shouting back at him, and then he pushed him."
I tried to get her to look me in the eye. "Mrs. Dobbs, where is Geo?" She continued to study my duty shirt as she reconstructed.
"Ozzy Jr. fell, grabbed the golf club, and I swear he only swung it to warn George, but George stepped toward him, and I just ran from the room."
I nudged her chin up with my hand and finally got her to look me in the face.
"Walter, Ozzy killed him."
I thought about the blood trail that I'd followed on the deck steps. "Mrs. Dobbs, did the fight take place in your kitchen?" She caught her breath and nodded.
"Yes."
"And that's where you left the two of them?"
"Yes."
I nodded and tried to smile a little reassurance into her. "Well, your son is at my office and there's nobody down in your kitchen. In my profession, dead people tend to stay where they drop, so I think that Geo came too, noticed that nobody was around, and went home."
"Oh, Walter, do you think so?"
"Yep, I do. Head wounds tend to bleed a lot, but there's really not enough blood down there to indicate a serious injury." I straightened. "But if he's out there wandering around in this cold and snow with any kind of head wound, I have to go find him. Now, the EMTs are going to be here any time now, and I need you to tell them to sit pat till I call into them on my radio, okay?" She sniffed.
"Okay.
Why don't you go down in the living room and wait by the front door?" I looked at her seriously. "And don't go in the kitchen." She wiped her eyes with her fists.
"I won't."
The weather had stiffened, and it was worse on the ridge above the Red Hills Rancho Arroyo's back nine, with beads of snow sandblasting horizontally and my muscles grinding together like ice floes in a wind-lashed sea. I couldn't pick up enough of the blood trail, but found a small piece of Geo's Carhartt flapping on the barbed wire fence where he'd climbed over. I straddled the old three-strand, attached to posts so aged they looked as if they might have grown there, pulled the tail end of the muffler up from where it was wrapped around my hat, and played the beam of the big flashlight across the drifts. I could still see the boot tracks in the foot-deep snow. He hadn't continued straight, but had tacked against the wind. I twisted my hat down harder so that the aperture between it and my scarf was like the visor on a knight's helmet, and pressed my face against the inside of my upturned collar. My stomach growled, and I thought about the two burritos lying on Ruby's desk. Henry had probably fed them to Dog. I climbed the ridge and looked down at the path that skirted the junkyard dump and saw where it ended at the back of the Stewart compound. with the abandoned vehicles and trailer houses, it reminded me of Khe Sanh, Vietnam, just 100 degrees colder. My radio crackled. Static.
Unit 1, we're 1023 at 441 Eagle Ridge.
I plucked the radio from my belt and hit